Our last case for the morning, 2022-14, Highland Tavern versus Michael DeWine, Governor of the State of Ohio. We have the Honorable Judge Craig Baldwin of the 5th District Court of Appeals seated for Justice Fisher, and the Honorable Matthew Byrne of the 12th District Court of Appeals sitting for Justice DeWine. Good morning. Thank you. Mr. Warner, Mendenhall. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Your Honors. My name is Warner Mendenhall, and I represent Highland Tavern. Since the onset of the pandemic, we have had, first of all, we had a crisis with the COVID-19 disease, but we've also had a crisis which we've seen throughout state and federal courts around the land of executive overreach, where businesses have faced officials that have claimed competence in areas outside of their authority and power, and they have put in place precautionary measures against a disease that oftentimes exceeds their power, both administrative and executive. Highland Tavern, and in this case, what happened is that Rule 80 was instituted by the Liquor Commission, and Rule 80 set the hours limiting sale of alcohol to on-premises consumption to before 10 p.m., which is in direct violation of hours that were set by the state legislature. So they had no power to do that. It violates basic separation of power, which is implied in our jurisprudence in the state of Ohio, including the Euclid v. Jameson case. So that conflict Rule 80 limited the permit holders to selling liquor and beer between 5:30 a.m. and 10 p.m., and then consumption as late as 11 p.m., and it also allowed sale and delivery off premises. This law was in place for 120 days, and there's been some confusion in the lower courts as to what our challenge actually was. The lower courts have said that we were challenging the revocation of the license. Now, we wanted that license to be in place. I want my clients to have work. I want them to be able to make money. I want them to be able to earn a living, and I believe they have a constitutional right to that. But our complaint was not about the revocation. It was a facial challenge to Rule 80 because it directly contradicted the law. It directly contradicted the legislative allowances. My client had numerous permits. They had a D1, a D2, a D3, a D3A, and a D6. Within those provisions, this is all found at Revised Code 4303, within the D3 permit itself, it allowed sales up until 1 a.m. It's explicit in the statute.
Mr. Mendenhall, your client only appealed the three Rule 80 citations, but not the Rule 52, which dealt with other issues on how the bar was run. The Liquor Division went ahead and dealt with all four.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any problems with that? I mean, I think they can't they?
I'll explain it this way. We believe that the administrative process and the administrative appeal is actually irrelevant to what we're facing here. But I'll address that. I think that had we prevailed at the trial court and had Rule 80 been thrown out as unconstitutional, those violations, we may have had one violation left, which would have been a disorderly conduct, I believe, even though I think that's linked to Rule 80 as well. But I don't think that would have involved the revocation of a license, accepting that matters. I don't really think it matters, but accepting that matters, one violation would not have involved revocation of a license.
So one Rule 52 violation would not involve revocation of the license, aside from the Rule 80 issues.
I don't believe so, but I don't believe it's relevant. But I don't believe one violation for a bar that had never had any violations before There's none in the history of this bar. It's always been a law-abiding bar. So I don't believe first-time issue, one of the violations, I don't think it would have resulted in revocation of the license. But let's remember, in our challenge, as a facial challenge, we sued the governor. The governor wasn't included in that administrative appeal. We also sued each individual member of the Liquor Control Commission in their official capacity. We didn't just appeal a commission ruling. So there's different parties here, and I think Judge Frye's ruling, which we cite to, really clears that up. Judge Frye, as you know, and I would like to reserve a couple of minutes, my clock went off here, but Judge Frye's ruling, you know, which the state asked for consolidation of the cases, and we did not oppose that. We were willing to argue our cases in a consolidated case, but Judge Frye said, look, there are different parties in this case. There are different issues in these cases. This is a facial challenge, not an as-applied challenge. Because of those differences, Judge Frye said it has to be a separate case. And then Judge Phipps came in and said, this is an as-applied challenge, and oh, you're just challenging the revocation. What she did not do, and what I think the appellate court did not do in this case, is they didn't look at our complaint in terms of what it was doing. Yeah, of course we asked for an injunction. Of course we don't want the license to be removed, but it's a straight-up facial challenge on the constitutionality of Rule 80. So, but I think Judge Frye's opinion, you know, I mean, and just practically speaking, exactly what happened here, there was an effort to consolidate both cases, and the judge said you can't consolidate them, they have to stay separate. How practically do you bring, you know, in an administrative appeal, these declaratory issues with different parties? That's not, I've not seen that work in any of the cases that we've looked at in preparation for this argument. If we go back as well, all the way to 1952, in a case we cited, Sokuch versus Bryant, it states in that case, long-held law, liquor control cannot adopt a rule in conflict with the Liquor Control Act. So the statute was in place, the rule clearly conflicts, and liquor control shut down the Highland Tavern based on Rule 80, which was in violation of separation of powers. So that basically is the first part of our case. The second one is this issue of the administrative appeal. It does not divest the courts of jurisdiction. So just because there's an administrative appeal over here, which I believe is irrelevant, it doesn't divest the courts of jurisdiction to hear a declaratory judgment action about a facial challenge to the, you know, of Rule 80. And I think that's what the courts were saying. It's divesting it. You have to bring those challenges in the administrative appeal. Well, no, you don't. It does appear in the case law that you may bring the challenge, but you're not required to bring that challenge in the administrative appeal. Basically, what the courts seem to do, the lower courts have done, is they have ceded the authority to determine constitutionality to the agency. That's not the agency's role. That's the role of the courts to determine constitutionality.
Counsel, why is this not moot?
Well, it's not moot for lots of reasons. I mean, first of all, we believe it can be repetitive. I know the state says this is not going to repeat, but we're hearing about, you know, COVID variants, increasingly severe. We're hearing about monkeypox. I mean, pandemic is on everybody's mind.
Well, Counselor, that can come up again, but how is it an issue that can repeat and be incapable of review, because there are mechanisms you have to challenge it at the hearing stage, at the trial court level? So how can it escape? It could repeat but not be reviewed.
Well, the way the statutory structure is set up, the governor can declare an emergency. It's for 120 days.
Okay, temporary restraining order or emergency injunction.
Well, and that's what we tried to do here, but it's very quick. 120 days is very quick. So I think it can evade review because of the speed with which the governor can act almost immediately and the speed with which that emergency power actually is exhausted just in 120 days.
And how can there be a reasonable expectation that the same complaining parties will be subject to the same action?
Well, I think that's interesting. The state says, well, you don't have a license, so you can't be a party. Well, I guarantee you my clients are trying to get another license and intend to get another license to reopen this bar. So they will be...
But that's a hypothetical for the future.
Well, then I would come back and say the harm is ongoing. Their license has been revoked. There is no income today in that bar. So the harm hasn't stopped yet. So I do want to reserve a couple of minutes. I don't know how much time I have left.
4 minutes and 41 seconds.
Okay, thank you. I will reserve my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Carney, we're going to try and reset the podium.
Good morning. It says 4:30. Oh, now it says 15. Great. Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. Highland Tavern can't overcome either of the two independent jurisdictional flaws here, mootness or the rule against bypassing special statutory proceedings, the administrative process. And these two flaws, although they're independent, share two common problems. One is that they had a valid admin appeal and they threw it away, and that undercuts any necessity claim that we have to hear this or we wouldn't have a vehicle. Because they had one, they threw it away. In fact, as I'll get to in a minute, other bars have continued to litigate these, even just recently. And second, although they need to fix both flaws, in trying to address both, they argue inconsistent things, especially about their old license. To try to overcome mootness, they say in their brief, well, restoration of the license, we could still somehow play our cards right to get it back. But then when they're over here on the part about bypassing the administrative process, they say, no, this isn't trying to get the license, you've misunderstood, this is only to prevent future harms. Well, there is no future harm to them. The past is past, the future that they posit isn't going to happen, and so there's no controversy in the present. Let's take these one piece at a time. On mootness, the administrative appeal is closed. So now we have the case is closed, the license is gone, the bar is closed, the rule is gone, and the statute's been amended too. I don't know how you could get more moot than that. They have to overcome not only all of those factual mootness problems, but every legal test of mootness that I know of. This isn't evading review, they threw away review. In fact, we filed a supplemental authority last week, W6 Restaurant Holdings, where a bar from Cleveland raised the identical challenge, separation of powers based on the D3A statute, 4303.16, same claim as here, 10th District rejected it on the merits, but what's more important, aside from the merits helping, is that they had their day in court. They had their day in court too, but they threw that appeal away. There's also no exception here for voluntary cessation here, because that's for when a bad actor tries to just pause their behavior and leap back into action because they're trying to avoid a case. We didn't set this timeline and this expiration date to get around this case. We had already preset this. They filed 3 or 4 days before expiration when it was already going to die. And they're the ones that, again, review has continued, not just on Rule 80, but Rule 52 cases, not at issue here, but there have been several bars that have actually beaten us and we haven't appealed to this case. We've taken our lumps. There is a place for executive action review, sure, and reasonable minds can differ about policy calls in the COVID pandemic, the first wave of 2020. But that's behind us now. We even have our chairs back in the court. The plexiglass is gone. We're happy about that. And where there's continuing consequences like admin appeals, those are not moot. But where it's a facial challenge allegedly to a law's ongoing future effects and the law is gone, courts around the country, we cite several federal and state cases where they've all been thrown out as moot. And we can't restart this by bringing back the rule and changing the statute, because 0.18 has been amended to cover the hours now. We would have to not only amend the rule and amend the statute, and they'd have to have a license again, but if that were an exception to mootness, nothing would ever be moot. You could always say, well, they'll reenact it. Every court that's ever looked at it has said voluntary cessation is not overcome when you've actually repealed a law. But let's look over at the DJ issue. You cannot use a declaratory judgment to bypass an administrative proceeding. This court said that many times in Forcione, in Taft O'Connor, in Albright, in I'm going to mispronounce that one, so I'll skip that one.
So
there's
so
many.
I want to ask you, though, on this declaratory judgment. The appellate decision said, thus, while an independent declaratory judgment action may be appropriate in certain circumstances, the facts here demonstrate the declaratory judgment action improperly sought to bypass the administrative appeal process. So it looks to me like the appellate court was saying, we recognize that you could have these two actions going on at the same time, but on what basis do you think that the appellate court found that this particular declaratory judgment action was grounded in trying to bypass the administrative appeal process?
Sure. There are several indicia, and there may be close cases, but this is as clear a clash as I've ever seen. When they filed, they asked for a TRO the same day that said, give our license back. Well, that's obviously trying to get around. They had an admin appeal where they had sought a stay pending appeal saying, don't take the license. That was denied. So they run to another court and they say, give the license back. When your TRO that day says, give the license back, that's trying to get around licensing. They also, if you read their complaint, and we do encourage you, look at it. We have plenty of citations to specific paragraphs. All they talk about was our license was unfairly taken. That's backward looking. It is true you can file a forward-looking DJ. For example, the very origin in Berger Brewing of saying you can do a pre-enforcement challenge is for someone who says, I don't want to violate a law, a rule, a statute, whatever. I don't want to violate. I want a declaration about my rights before I get in trouble. But when you've already gotten in trouble, already gotten tagged, already had a hearing, then it's too late to say this is a pre-enforcement challenge.
Sure,
this
but
is
the declaratory
a head-to-head
judgment.
Clash.
Declaratory judgment's not that limited. I mean, in a business dispute, when there's been a breach, people file declaratory judgments all the time to determine the rights of the parties.
Sure, for going forward. And here's the thing about that. Wimslow is a perfect example. The smoking ban case, this court divvied up and said, all of your complaints you have about your past fines and your past violations, those are behind you, those were in the admin process, you can't bring that in the DJ. They said you can, however, bring a DJ to stop the smoking ban in the future so you don't have future enforcement problems. The problem with this case, both on the day they filed and even more so now, is that there was no future to enjoin because they filed 4 days before the rule was to expire and they didn't have a license. So they were only complaining about the past, and we know that both because their TRO was attacking the past and asking for restoration, but we know they couldn't truly be attacking the future application of the rule to them because their bar had been closed for a month. There was no future they faced. They were in the same position as if you or I or anyone else without a liquor license simply said, I might someday get a liquor license, I don't want this rule to apply to me. But at this point, even if they somehow fit in some narrow DJ application back on that day briefly, since then, again, the rule's gone away and the statute that it allegedly conflicted with has changed. I also want
to
add...
I have to follow up with one more. Going back to the initial question that I asked your opposing counsel, the appeal was only of the three violations of Rule 80, but not Rule 52, but of course it could be adjudicated in the process. But is it only in the administrative appeal process that it could be divined or decided whether the revocation of the permit, because that's severe when it's a revocation, was more due to Rule 52 than Rule 80? I mean, what process sorts that out? Can that come into the declaratory judgment process, or is that only in the auspices of the administrative appeal?
That's only in the admin appeal, Your Honor, and here's why. Because Rule 52, disorderly conduct, which is not part of their appeal, it's not before us today, but that's by definition involves facts that have to be developed at a hearing. And this court said that in Redding versus PUC and in Winslow, that to the extent you can sometimes do a DJ for a facial challenge, no one is saying Rule 52 about disorderly conduct is facially unconstitutional. They were just saying you can't use disorderly against us. But by the way, we have lost several Rule 52 cases.
Sure, but do we know that your opposing counsel says we've been law-abiding, this is the first time we've even had a violation, and normally you don't get revoked on a first time, even if it's Rule 52. So, I mean, can we discern from the administrative appeal what the reason was for the revocation? Did it have anything to do with Rule 80, or was it all Rule 52,
sure.
Or was it a combination?
The Liquor Commission cited Rule 80 in its order, which is in the record in the administrative appeal. Since that's a separate case, that record's not technically before the court, but all the record of that, we put in the citation and the case number so you could see the link online where all the documents are there. It's not relevant to this appeal, but that does belong in the admin appeal.
Did they have to wait for the actual revocation before they could bring the declaratory judgment?
It depends. If their declaration is my license was unfairly taken, then yes, that has to go before the hearing. If you're saying my license was unfairly taken because of this violation on August 4, August 6, I mentioned, by the way, there were four violations. There were three in this hearing. One was still pending when they went up on the admin appeal and filed the DJ. So they had so many. This wasn't just a first-time offender. It was a first, second, third-time offender all at once.
But is it ripe for declaratory judgment if it's not taken?
No, it's not ripe for declaratory judgment because this court has repeatedly said you can't use DJ to bypass. And when you have a hearing going on and you say, I want a declaration, whether it's the doctor in Galesh or the dentist who says, I want a declaration that I didn't act against medical standards. You can't do that. If you want a facial challenge saying this law is unconstitutional as to everyone, then you can do that, but you can't say my license on this date for this action. You can't do that, and you can't seek a remedy of I want my license back. That belongs in licensing, because if that doesn't violate this court's rule, I don't know what does. Then your entire case law, and they have not asked you to overrule or reject Albright, Taft O'Connor, Forcione, and so forth.
Sure, but a facial challenge may have some elements in it, for instance, what you were just mentioning, which aren't going to survive the challenge. But the facial challenge itself, why is it subjugated to the administrative appeal process? Why does someone have to wait or have to, I mean, I don't understand why you're saying that it's either or.
You don't have to wait, Your Honor. If you simply want a declaration of how this law works or that it's invalid and you haven't violated, but once you have violated and you're in the process, you can't seek a workaround to have a second court make a declaration that conflicts. Otherwise, you'd have two conflicting rulings. This court might say the license revocation was good. This court might say it's bad. And the legislature has chosen to funnel these, and that's what this court's case law is about. I also want to briefly mention, they have a procedural problem. Even if you somehow gave them a free pass on mootness and a free pass on this DJ rule, the merits are still not before the court. And that's because the procedural posture here is that a 12B1 was granted, no jurisdiction. So if you reverse that order, and again, the court always reviews judgments, not opinions, if you reverse that order, that just gets the case back on track. This is not just the normal prudential rule that this court doesn't reach issues not reached below. When this court uses that prudential rule, which also applies here, it does so when at least the trial court order has everything procedurally available, and it's simply that the appeals court went on one summary judgment issue versus another summary judgment issue. But they never moved for affirmative summary judgment in their favor or for judgment on the pleadings on this alleged facial issue. They only sought a TRO, but they didn't try to file an appeal from the PI or even name it in their notice of appeal going back to that. All they took to the 10th District was reverse this dismissal. So if you were to give them the order they want reversed, That just puts the case back on track. That doesn't get you to the merits. I'm not aware of any case. I couldn't find any from this court or even any appeals court in Ohio that has ever taken a B1 reversal and actually gotten to the merits and ruled in a plaintiff's favor. On top of that, the trial court actually said this fails on jurisdiction, and independently they granted a 12B6 under the normal DJ Act standard, saying this doesn't meet the statutory test for speedy relief will resolve your issue, because even a declaration won't get your license back because you have to disclaim the license interest to not run into the bypass rule. And that's a problem for them, because they've only asked this court to look straight at this facial issue, but they haven't, as far as I can tell, brought up the B6. So they've got a B1 problem and a B6 problem.
I want to go, if we can, briefly back to the mootness issue. You've indicated today and indicated in your brief that this regulation is not capable of repetition. But where in the, I mean, we don't have much of a record, but how do we know that the governor or the Liquor Control Commission or the executive branch in general, where does this idea that they aren't going to re-implement that rule, where does that come from?
Well, several answers, Your Honor. I see my time's about to expire, just like Rule 80 has, but I'll answer quickly. We know that this issue that they seek about the rule conflicts with the statute. Well, the statute here, which now sets out hours expressly for D5 holders, which is incorporated, 4303.18 has actually been amended. And so now there isn't the same kind of conflict. Now there is a limit. On top of that, the courts that have all looked at voluntary cessation, whether they looked at under that prong or capable of repetition, have always said repeal of a statute does change things. Ordinary just resuming behavior, if you look at the capable of repetition
but theory, there's nothing that we have before us from the executive branch saying that there will be no attempt in the future to re-implement Rule 80, correct?
Well, there's also no indication that they will. There's nothing that they can point to that says this is coming any minute now. And what we also do have is that the legislature has not only changed 4303.18, but the legislature has also, in Senate Bill, I believe it's 22 last year, or no, I guess now it's 2021, 2 years ago, changed the governor's power to even name emergencies. There's now a whole process where the legislature can review that. So the 120 days, those sort of things, can't happen statutorily. So there are guardrails. And the big picture here, Your Honors, again, reasonable minds can differ about some of the things in 2020. Sure, as a matter of policy, that debate belongs in the legislature, but it would be ironic to address alleged overreach by the executive to take all the limits off the judicial power to review live controversies and say the judiciary should have no limits to look at old disputes with a closed bar, an expired rule, and an amended statute. If that's not moot, I don't know what is. So we ask the court to affirm the dismissal, but in any case, there's no way to reach the merits here. Thank you.
Thank you. You have time remaining. Mr. Mendenhall.
Thank you. I think I've been clear under 12B1, the court has the authority to determine whether something is constitutional or not. So I think that's clear. The issue here is exactly what I started off with, is this executive overreach. You know, we see it in this instance, we've seen it in a lot of instances, and we've seen the state of Ohio argue against executive overreach at the U.S. Supreme Court. But here, they want to allow executive overreach to continue and to be available, and that's the issue here right now. It's the behavior of the executive. It's the behavior of the administrative body. That behavior needs to be addressed. And then secondly, how do we address that behavior? Of course, I went into court. Of course, my clients want to have their license back, but that wasn't the point of the complaint. You know, you can have a declaratory judgment action that declares the rights and status of a party and the parties without even having a remedy. We want the declaration about the rights and status of the parties. We want the declaration that the governor and liquor control exceeded their statutory authority. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that all of the cases that they cite, if you look at the cases, the cannabis case, the POCO case, the annexation case, the elections case. If you look at the cases that they're citing, those cases have a legislated authority that is granted to the administrative body that's complete. That is not the case here. The legislature held back. It said, we're setting times on these particular permits. And the legislature, after seeing what happened to all the bars and all the restaurants around the state and all the violations, they went back in and they made sure that they changed it so it was stripped completely under the D5 license from liquor control. But those hours were already in there under the D3 and the D3As. What the legislature did is say, you overstep. You can see the legislature respond from that. So that's what we want to do. We want, this court needs to establish, I believe, that the declaratory judgment action is the way to address this constitutional violation, and the idea that there's remedies and the idea that we asked for a license to be restored, it's not relevant to the facial challenge. I admit it's not relevant, but of course that's what my client wants me to do. But that's taking place on the administrative side, and we do believe if the rights had been declared, we would have been able to get that license back somehow, some way. So it's still important, and I do want to emphasize the harm is continuing. It's continuing today. There is no income for this family. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision by the court. Thank you. You're free to go. We have one presentation for admission to the bar after you've left. Thank you.